Hello, everyone. Welcome to a very special episode of Uncanny Treks. We are continuing our Batman trek. We are continuing our trek through Paul Dini's Detective Comics run. We are on our third episode of the Paul Dini Detective Comics run. It is Private Casebook. I am Bob in Cascadia. That is Matt in the Southland. Matt, how you feeling tonight?
Feeling okay, Bob. The whole name Private Casebook threw me for a bit of a loop because I remember there being another book that had a similar name, The Black Casebook, that was dropped around this time because it tied in somewhat with Morrison's run.
In the Morrison run, there's The Black Casebook, which is the collection of all of Batman's strangest cases, which ties into the Black Glove story and into the Batman RIP story. And then DC published a collection of the stories that Morrison was referencing, called it The Black Casebook. It's a really cool collection. It's way out of print. And last time I checked, it was catastrophically expensive on eBay. And it really makes me regret that I did not snap it up back when it was released in the late aughts.
Me too, because I do remember considering purchasing that because it just looked neat. Just this conglomeration of older Silver Age stories. Good stuff.
There was another collection put out around that time, too. That's not the Many Deaths of Batman. That's a John Byrne story. But there's a collection of Batman Dies stories, or stories where Batman fakes his death. Whereas the Black Casebook was more 50s and 60s. The Many Deaths of Batman, although it wasn't called that, included a famous 70s three-parter where the Rogues Gallery has a trial to try to determine who killed Batman and Lex Luthor is the judge. And I really wanted to get both of those collections, both the Black Casebook and that Deaths of Batman collection, and I didn't. As far as I know, they're way, way out of print and never reissued.
But today, Bob, we're going to talk about the Private Casebook.
We are going to talk about the Private Casebook, Matt. Confusion aside, this is, what, issues 840 to 845? Does that sound right?
That is correct.
And Matt, other little trade paperback gripe for you. So the first two collections, Detective and Death in the City, I own copies of those, which DC was only publishing those collections as trade paperbacks back in the day. But I remember being mega annoyed when DC collected this part of the run and they put it out as a hardcover first. And I wasn't going to pay more money to get something that didn't match my other two collections. And this is back in the day where you had to wait a year for DC to put out a paperback. They actually still have to do this, but it took a year between the hardcover and the paperback, unlike Marvel, where it only takes a couple months. Real sore point for me. And so I was waiting that year to get the trade paperback, but in the meantime, they announced Heart of Hush, and I was just like, oh, no. And I gave up reading the Paul Dini Detective Comics run out of protest of Heart of Hush and the switch to hardcovers.
And now here you are, Bob, in 2025, podcasting, getting ready to cover Heart of Hush in a couple of weeks.
It might be 3 weeks, but yeah, we're going to get there. So issue number 840 is the epilogue to the resurrection of Ra's al Ghul. And I was initially going to say we should skip this because it's the epilogue to a stupid crossover. And I was also unsure why it was even in this collection. You would think it would find a more natural home in the resurrection of Ra's al Ghul collection. But I realized when looking at it that this is the first issue where Dustin Nguyen is the artist, taking over for Don Kramer, who is the primary artist on the first two collections. That's why they wanted to include it here. And if I had to guess, Dustin Nguyen joining the book, he's a slightly more hot artist than Kramer. That's why DC switched over to putting these in hardcovers rather than trade paperbacks.
I really don't remember reading Resurrection of Ra's al Ghul either.
This issue really solved a dilemma for me. I read Resurrection of Ra's al Ghul when it was in a hardcover in our hometown Barnes & Noble. And I was buying the Grant Morrison collections. And the Resurrection of Ra's al Ghul was technically a part of that run, but it was clearly also not a part of that run. And I didn't want to spend money on it. So I just read it in the Barnes & Noble. I remember being really confused because I had read online that the crossover ended with Batman putting Ra's in Arkham Asylum under a fake name. And that doesn't happen at the end of the Resurrection of Ra's al Ghul collection. Now, nearly 20 years later, I have clarity of, oh, it's in the epilogue that I never read that was in a collection I never got, in which Ra's al Ghul gets incarcerated in Arkham.
Huh. And Bob, it also gave me a slight little bit of clarity for my own headcanon. In Arkham Asylum, the video game, Bob, you go into the morgue and there's a dead body. And on the tag of the dead body, it says Ra's al Ghul. I always wondered, what's that about? Why is he in Arkham? So in my head canon now, that took place after the resurrection of Ra's al Ghul. It still doesn't make sense because he's got a fake name. He's going by an alias or whatever. But still, it just makes me feel a little better.
Do you like the irony of Ra's being put in Arkham like any other Batman villain?
I do think that's hilarious.
It is funny, although it does maybe also break the character a little bit, because once he's been diminished by Batman so much that it's almost, what's the point of having him as a character? Why bring him back from the dead? Why not just leave him dead, right?
Right, yeah, but you know they will.
The complaint, though, isn't that they resurrect him. The complaint is that you resurrect him only to then break him as a villain.
He can always come back somehow with something cooler. He'll have another kid. He'll have a brother. They find ways to bring him back, and they're awesome.
It took years, because in the Morrison run, if I'm remembering right, Talia is the head of the League of Shadows that whole run. Ra's doesn't play any role in the Morrison run. He doesn't play any role in Snyder's run. I'm sure at some point in the 2010s, they brought Ra's back as a villain, but it's not like they had an arc planned. It was just, oh, let's resurrect him and then make him look like crap and then not use him for 5 years.
Well, they did with Harvey Dent when they made him Harvey Dent, not Two-Face.
There's definitely similarities there, but and definitely there's like a lack of exploiting your story resources. But at least with the Harvey Dent thing, they didn't break him as a character. They just didn't exploit the fact that they could have done a year of comics or 6 months of comics where he's not Two-Face. He is Harvey Dent.
Bob seems to think that just because you serve time in Arkham, you're no longer a formidable foe for Batman.
That's true of Ra's, though. Ra's whole thing is he's a criminal mastermind who Batman doesn't catch. He's not on the same level as like Joker or Mr. Zaz or Two-Face. Once Ra's is in Arkham, he's diminished.
Batman's supposed to replace him. That's the ultimate goal. So he's supposed to be the perfect human specimen.
I don't mind getting Ra's out of the way and having Talia be in charge of the shadows. That's cool. I think it's weird that they resurrected him only to then not use him for years and to diminish him as a character.
Did you like the way Batman Beyond treated Ra's al Ghul?
That's a great episode.
I'm not going to spoil it for the listeners, but if you've never watched that episode, find it. It's a Batman Beyond episode, something to do with Ra's al Ghul.
There's a really good Ra's guest stars in a Superman episode too. That's really good.
Yes.
Not as creepy as the Batman Beyond, but yeah. Well, Matt, to keep going to number 841, Wonderland Gang, I just wanted to say before we summarize this issue begins with the caption, "The events in this issue take place prior to Salvation Run." Are those the scariest words in the English language? They might be.
Yeah, I had to go do the whole, what was Salvation Run?
Wasn't it all the villains got sent to an alien planet?
Like Battle World or something? It's this big battle royale on this planet, and they were just going to have to fight each other. I bet I was really excited when this was first announced way back when. I probably thought it was going to be a really cool idea, knowing me back then. But now, that is so dumb.
I do remember it being announced, and I do remember being somewhat excited, and that I do remember the response to the first issue being almost universal panning, and I never have to read that. I might be wrong, but I think it's written by Bill Willingham, and I hate Bill Willingham. I think he's terrible. Although I didn't know enough to hate him at that point. I've since read some of Fables and I hate Willingham now.
Well, the whole reason they have to make sure they point this out is because the Mad Hatter is one of the villains that is transported to that planet.
What goes down in issue 841, Wonderland Gang?
Well, Bob, we have Tweedledee and Tweedledum using the Mad Hatter's technology against him.
So I have a two-pronged question for you here, Matt. A, how do you feel about having these very 90s-fied versions of Tweedledee and Dum? And then, were you amused by the revelation that Tweedledee and Dum are the masterminds who are mind-controlling the Hatter in a reversal of the usual roles?
And Tweedledee and Tweedledum are a jobber tag team, fodder for Batman to beat up. They're henchmen. And yeah, it was a twist with them being the mastermind, but what other direction were they going to go? It would have been a generic Mad Hatter story had they not.
That's fair. I think I'm not as hostile to Tweedledee and Dum as you. I would just point out that although they definitely are used as henchmen, they are an interesting pair of henchmen that most henchmen couldn't be the star of like a 60s Batman comic where Tweedledee and Dum could. But I agree with you that they're not amazing. And certainly if we were to compare them to the Jobbers, the Terrible Trio from last week, I like the Terrible Trio a lot more than I like Tweedledee and Dum.
That's a good comparison there. Would they be C-list or D-list?
I would have to define my terms more to be sure, but yeah. I think I would probably lean D-list, although a case could be made for C-list.
I have to really create a range here of something. But we may have to do that one day, Bob, forever bored.
That might be fun. I did want to flag my favorite art in 841 was on page 326 in our fan-made omnibus. And you have Wynn's art of Batman visiting the Mad Hatter's haunts all over Gotham. I thought it was very pretty art.
My favorite panel is on 336. It's where Batman disarms the character known as the Unicorn by puncturing what looks to me like some kind of incendiary grenade with the Unicorn's horn.
That's a bit extra, wouldn't you say?
Very extra, but it was cool to look at.
Let's move on to issue number 842, Suit of Sorrows.
This one was not in my omnibus, but I had read the issue before because McFarlane dropped a Suit of Sorrows Azrael action figure, and I had no clue what that meant. So I had to go find the issue and figure out where he got this outfit, which we find out he got during that resurrection time.
Apparently, the Suit of Sorrows debuted in Resurrection of Ra's al Ghul, like you're saying, and honestly, I didn't remember it at all. Although, you had a very apt comparison of the Suit of Sorrows, Matt.
It's literally the symbiote suit from Spider-Man.
The phrase Batman symbiote suit sounds pretty lame, and in a lot of ways, the Suit of Sorrows is pretty lame. I guess I would say to listeners, it's not maybe not as bad, but when I hear the phrase Batman Suit of Sorrows, I think this is something that's terrible. And it's not actually that terrible. It's interestingly appropriate for the Batman mythos to have this as the symbiote suit. I would be totally fine never reading a Suit of Sorrows comic again.
It's not as extreme as the Spider-Man symbiote suit stuff in the issue alone. He gets a little angrier when he's fighting. He has to stop himself when he's beating up a bad guy. Almost like he has some of the system still inside the suit. Yeah. It reminds me of how Azrael acted in Nightfall.
Well, and Azrael uses the Suit of Sorrows at different points.
Correct.
Although, the other thing is there's a lot of talk about a knight in this, a medieval knight, Geoffrey de Cantona, who I think, I can't remember, made the Suit of Sorrows or first wore the Suit of Sorrows, whatever the specifics are. Apparently, that will be somewhat of a big deal in the Azrael series that happens right after this, which is not Jean-Paul Valley Azrael, but Michael Lane. Both the Suit of Sorrows and the knight Geoffrey de Cantona play into that series. So, Matt, I recently read or skimmed the whole Denny O'Neill Azrael series, and it's pretty bad, but I had a good time. But then I was going to try the Michael Lane Azrael series, and I started it, and I just had no idea what was going on. I don't know if I'm stupid or the comic is terrible or some combination of both. It also ties in really heavy into Batman RIP, but even though I remember Batman RIP pretty well, I don't remember the Michael Lane stuff very well, so I was lost when I tried to read the Michael Lane Azrael.
I might have to give it an attempt. I've never tried that. I've read the Denny O'Neill, the Azrael.
You read it a lot earlier than
that. I enjoyed it at the time. It's nothing great, but I'll have to give the Michael Lane Azrael series a shot then.
At some point, and listeners, I definitely don't want to do this year. This is a future plan, but I wouldn't mind us doing the Morrison Batman run for the podcast. But
oh, yeah, that would be fun.
And then when we do that, I don't know if it's worth covering for the podcast, but maybe we could look into the Michael Lane Azrael, see if it's worth doing for the podcast, see if we understand it with Batman RIP right there.
Yeah, that'd be a good idea. I'm down for that at some point.
Speaking of old Batman, have you ever read Peter Milligan's Dark Knight, Dark City?
I do not think I have.
Oh, man. We definitely, if we ever do the Morrison Batman, we'll do Dark Knight, Dark City.
It's like a Riddler story.
It's no Riddler story you've ever read.
Is it Dark Riddler?
Like
Hush?
Satan Riddler. No, like demonic Riddler.
He shaves a question mark in his head.
I bring up Dark Knight, Dark City because it's by Peter Milligan. I like Peter Milligan a lot, but there is a thing where like 80s, 90s Peter Milligan, arguably a lot better writer than 2000s, 2010s Peter Milligan, although that's not an absolute rule. There's some really good 21st century Peter Milligan stuff too. And this is a pretty okay issue, but it's nowhere near as good as Dark Knight, Dark City by Peter Milligan. So I bring it up. And also, I don't have anything profound to say about him, but we do have a serial killer in 842 named Gotham Jack, which is a very Peter Milligan idea of a serial killer. And I think it's a good one-off serial killer.
I dig the name. It's got a ring to it. Let's talk about the big comic, the big chunk of this trade, the two issues that are the steak and potatoes.
This is the prime stuff.
This is the good stuff, yes, Bob. So in issue 843 and 844, opening night and curtains, it gives us the origin and the potential demise of Lady Ventriloquist. And I say potential demise because it leaves it one. Anytime anybody falls in water, Bob, they may come back.
Water's a magical preservative, Matt.
They just magically wash up on shore alive.
So, Matt, were you surprised also that not just Lady Ventriloquist is back, but Zatanna is back so soon for another surprise two-parter after just being here last week for the Joker two-parter?
Yeah, Denny really loves Zatanna. Did you read his 2010 series?
So I'm not sure if I did or not. A long time ago, maybe 5-8 years ago, definitely pre-pandemic, there's a huge fat collection of the Zatanna series that has like a couple graphic novels he did. One's a Black Canary team up, and then one's like a solo graphic novel. And then it also has the series. And I got that collection from the local library. And I think I read the graphic novels, but I'm not sure. I can't remember if I read the full series or not.
I'm wondering if it's worth reading because, you know, he seems to appreciate the character. And I mean, it could be something worth reading.
That is something I've thought about us looking at after we finish our Hush Odyssey.
We've got all kinds of future plans here, Bob.
But to be clear, the Morrison plan, that's a 2026 plan. And Matt, I did want to ask, do you have any thoughts on why Dini creates a John Constantine double in these two-part issues, who is also Lady Ventriloquist, ex-husband, a gangster named Johnny Sabatino?
I don't know. I mean, he's kind of important. In the grand scheme of things, he really wasn't. He just, yeah.
He sort of is important to Lady Ventriloquist origin, but like you say, he's also not important.
Yeah.
And this is the moment you still couldn't use John Constantine in the main DC universe, I think, at this point. But within a couple years, they're going to bring John Constantine into the new 52, and you can just use him. So right before, you couldn't use him in mainline DC books.
Don't worry, we got Johnny Sabatino.
So my favorite panel was on 348, and just seeing Zatanna in sweats makes me laugh.
My favorite panel in this particular issue was 351 to 352. Zatanna was doing a magic trick or whatever in front of an audience, and Bruce is on the table, strapped down, and, you know, something awful is going to happen. Zatanna questions him, and he says he's already out of the straps. He did it himself. But then Zatanna transports him. The idea of the sequence is that Batman would do that anyway. Within costume. It's always interesting when I see Bruce Wayne using Batman's skills.
A couple other little bits from 843 that were interesting. Johnny Sabatino owns a club called Club Vesuvius that is volcano themed, and that's awesome. Yeah. And I do like seeing Lady Ventriloquist use ventriloquism to mimic Zatanna to Johnny Sabatino. That was a really neat bit too.
There's something funny too about Penguin comparing the Iceberg Lounge to the Vesuvius volcano piece, and how he's like, no, they're completely different. Why would I want to sabotage it? He's not taking my business. He does volcanoes.
I do icebergs.
Yes,
totally different.
Yeah.
Totally different. Oh, man. It's a little bit that famous clip of Vanilla Ice trying to explain sampling. He says, I put a ch.
Oh, he put a ch.
Totally different.
Oh, yeah.
It's totally different. Which, I mean, he's just sampling. It's fine. That's what you do in hip-hop, but it's funny. One other little curious thing from this issue. So there's a Vicky in this issue, and at first I thought it was Vicky Vale, but it turns out it's fashion designer Vicky Dejanovic.
That's a name that you don't see often, so when you do see it, that's the first person that pops in my head.
Exactly. Although I think being men from a certain age from the South, Matt, I know a lot more Vickies than most Americans.
We do, yes, true. I do know several.
Do you feel bad that you spoiled our listeners that Lady Ventriloquist is Bruce's old dead friend's fiance? You did this.
Yeah, that's what I get for reading so far ahead.
In 844, we have Leisure Suit Joker buying weapons from Johnny Sabatino in a flashback. Leisure Suit Joker just cracked me up.
And there's just something really cool about Zatanna being able to magically get Bruce into his costume.
There's such a deep irony here, Matt. Skimpy fishnet outfits is what people usually love Zatanna for, but you love Zatanna for her ability to dress Batman.
It's just a cool idea that he was without a suit and he needed it. And she just, boom, she just said, this is costume Batman, but it was backwards and bam, it was on him. You can rib me all you want. I want to see it in the new movie. If we're getting crypto, we need to get Zatanna.
They are going to do a Brave and the Bold. That seems about right. A close second in this issue for me to Leisure Suit Joker was we also had the revelation that Lady Ventriloquist has had a bang over her eye in all of her appearances. And I honestly just assumed she was a Looney Tunes character and that's just how she was. But we actually see what's underneath that bang in this issue, and it's a dead eye, which is very cool visually.
A design that they use constantly in Batman the Animated Series with the bang covering an eye.
Uplifted from Looney Tunes.
Yeah, I'm thinking of Jessica Rabbit, who had the same thing with the...
That's funny. And then, speaking of disguises and unveilings, Matt, I had totally forgotten at this point in the comic that Zatanna was in this, because she's not really in the second issue very much. And then it's revealed that she had disguised herself as a pigeon, which I thought was hysterical. That really made me laugh.
Do you see the pigeon on pages that you, like, would not have expected the pigeon to be there? I need to go back and look, so... If you're listening, you hear me, listeners, as you're going through, look for the pigeon. Look, that's actually Zatanna.
Well, and listeners, you may remember that last week, Matt was very, very triggered by a childhood flashback where we see child Batman, child Zatanna, and child Hush interacting at a party. And in this issue, we learn that Zatanna had a negative childhood experience with a puppet. And I really wonder if we ever get to Paul Dini's Zatanna series, is that going to reveal that she had some sort of negative childhood experience with a puppet and with Kid Hush?
What if, like, negative childhood puppet is like a child, is like a baby Scarface?
Ooh, that's fair. Although,
like,
I did there have
finger
been,
puppet.
I want to say it's been established that ventriloquist, or rather Scarface as a ventriloquist doll, has been around in its present form for decades, so even before Wesker.
Yeah, because he's a magical entity, isn't he?
Yeah, and he's been around since the 30s. He's a 30s gangster.
Him and Ra's al Ghul hung out.
All right. Well, to keep going to issue 845, our final issue for today, it's Riddle Unanswered. And I just wanted to start by observing that Dustin Nguyen's art sometimes looks like Jeff Lemire's to me, and it very much does in this issue, although I should also be fair and say that Dustin Nguyen way predates Jeff Lemire in working in mainstream comics, and so, if anything, maybe it's Jeff Lemire who sometimes looks like Dustin Nguyen rather than vice versa.
In this issue, Riddle Unanswered, issue 845, Batman consults Detective Group Chat to solve a string of murders and rescue the Riddler.
To start with a real minor point, Matt, the Riddler mentions Mr. Zazz in the same breath as the Joker. And that also puts us back to the 90s when they were pushing Mr. Zazz as one of the biggest threats. Do you think that's still what Dini's doing here? Or is it just a psychological thing where the Riddler is most frightened of the Joker and Zazz?
Victor Zazz, first appearance, Shadow of the Bat, number one, 1992.
The last Arkham, baby.
Yes. This character, why is he stuck around, Bob?
Gimmick, man.
Only so much you can do with the, you know, a man who, like, tally marks himself when he kills people. It's creepy, and I'm surprised there's not a real serial killer out there that's done the same thing, because it seems legit modus operandi.
I either haven't read The Last Arkham, or I don't remember it, but from what I understand, I think they very much play him as, like, a Hannibal Lecter.
Very much so.
That's part of the reason, both for the big push and for the long endurance. Although, I do agree with you that it's actually cool and as upsetting as I find the Mr. Zazz gimmick. You're right that there's only so much you can do story-wise with that, and so I don't think it's any mystery that he hasn't been in that many comics.
When you go and you put him with all the other guys, he's just like flat-up serial killer.
The Joker is an insane homicidal serial killer too, but he can still do stories where the Joker works with Penguin in it. It makes sense, but you can't have like an issue where Mr. Zazz has a playful team up with Catwoman or cooperates with Riddler to rob a bank.
Yeah, this dude shows up in the air ducts of an orphanage and starts slashing.
As that Nightfall Part 3, man, that's a creepy issue.
Yeah.
That's a creepy issue. Well, Matt, to go from the really dark to the much lighter and much more affirming, are you very happy that we have Catwoman in the Batmobile this issue?
Well, this trend is a real thing. I'm serious. We haven't seen Penguin in the Batmobile yet. We haven't seen Mr. Freeze in the Batmobile yet.
Mr. Freeze fit with, like, the cryo suit and all?
Bob, I mean, Batman would make it. He'd find a way. One of his Batmobiles. Oh, by the way, speaking of which, I did want to say that the Batmobile design in these issues, did you catch that it resembles the animated series?
I don't think I did at all.
Boxy. It's slightly more compact. It's not as long as that Batmobile was, but it still has that same ridge look on the front that you get from that one. I just thought it was a great way to incorporate that design into the car.
One other bit about Catwoman being in the Batmobile cockpit that I wanted to notice is that she's being jealous of both Zatanna for all the recent Dini crossovers with Zatanna, and she's being jealous of Jezebel Jett, who's the Bruce Wayne girlfriend in the Morrison run at the same time. And I thought that was great. I really enjoyed that little bit of continuity and Catwoman's having a little snit. I really liked it.
She could only talk about Zatanna. She didn't really have anything to say about Jezebel Chett.
Which was funny because, spoilers, Jezebel Chett.
Yeah. I don't think that was a hint, but it works out in the end.
Well, Matt, what was your favorite panel of the issue?
This is just a small thing because on page 392, there's one panel where Batman is shooting his grapples straight up. He's midway off, partially off the ground. And the way it's drawn, like it reminded me of a scene in Batman 89.
I know what you're talking about. There's a lot of good vertical orientation of Batman in this issue. My favorite panel was on 395, where we see Batman like standing straight up out of the Batmobile, and it's a similar look to the page you're describing. And yeah, I think in both pages, it looks fairly Mike Mignola-esque. So I was talking about there's a Jeff Lemire-esque quality to Wynn's art, but there's also a Mignola-esque quality. So yeah, really good art, this issue.
Well, Bob, part of this issue, we move into what I thought was going to be a gimmick, and that they start doing this like chat room thing.
It's too early for Reddit, right? It's too like, early for Twitter too.
This is like legit just chat room, instant message type stuff in this issue. And I thought that was going to be the gimmick throughout the comic, but it ends up not being. It's several pages too long.
Yeah, it does go on. Like you were saying, it almost, if it had been the whole issue, on one hand, that would have almost been better. But on the other hand, it did feel like it went too long. But that said, I would only fault Dini for that and the writing. I thought Wynn did a really interesting job of having like screen cap panel styles of the characters up against their chats in the text room. So it's good on the art end. I think it's more just on the writing end that it's a little bit of a failure of imagination to have so many pages of this.
We do find out he is chatting with a bunch of detectives.
They're calling the chat room is called the Heirs of Dupin, right? The first detective, which Paul Dini understands what the first detective story was, unlike Jeff Loeb and Hush.
That's so crazy because honestly, Bob, you and I have never had a conversation about Dupin for any reason.
Dupin, but there's not that much to say about him. If I'm remembering my gripe, I think he describes the Pearline letter as
the first detective story.
Which it's not. It's the third Dupin story. And again, if you wanted to quibble about whether or not Murders in the Rue Morgue is the first detective story, you're welcome to quibble. There's a debate that can be had there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pearline letter definitely is the third one after Murders in the Rue Morgue and The Mystery of Mary Rogers or Marie Roget.
It's just funny that it's come up twice, like, within our coverage of these comics.
Another little bit of trivia is somebody's going by Miss Marple in the chat room, who is one of Agatha Christie's famous detectives, along with Poirot. And the chick who's going along as Miss Marple is, if I'm remembering correctly, is redheaded and seated. And at first I was, is that meant to be Oracle? But I'm pretty sure it's not. She doesn't look like Barbara Gordon usually does, but just seating and red hair. That's 3/4 of the way to Barbara Gordon. I don't think she is anybody. And there's also an older black gentleman who's chatting. I think they're just supposed to represent random smart people on the internet who are helping Batman and Riddler. I couldn't figure out if they were anybody else.
I just assumed the African-American gentleman, he was a GCPD officer.
Was there an indication of that?
And the background, he was working.
I mean, meant to be Crispus Allen, although I don't think he looked like Crispus Allen.
No, he didn't look like Crispus Allen.
Because Crispus Allen is younger and a bit more distinctive looking than this guy. Detective Chimp, who is a really fun DC character, is also on this message board with Batman and Riddler. And then at this time, Detective Chimp is on the Magic Team Shadow Pact, which actually is a great series and we should maybe cover. I think Matt actually might like it. And as much as I hate Bill Willingham, that's actually the only thing Bill Willingham's ever written that I've enjoyed is Shadow Pact. But Blue Devil is also on Shadow Pact, and there's a nice little bit of comedy business between Detective Chimp and Blue Devil.
Weren't they a big piece of some other series?
You've read the Infinite Crisis tie-in Day of Vengeance.
Yes, you're right.
In the same way that Villains United launches the Secret Six series, Day of Vengeance launches the Shadow Pact series.
Bob's my comic book AI. I can just ask him, Bob, do you remember when I read the story about this person? And he's like, yes, I'll tell you exactly what it was called.
And I'm like an AI. When I don't know something, I just say I don't know it. I don't lie.
You don't give me what you think it could possibly be.
If I am giving you what I think it possibly could be, I caveat it. Just one other gag is Detective Chimp is typing with his feet and drinking a beer while in a private chat room with Batman. And Batman's just saying that he's glad the forums keep the Riddler off the streets.
To me, it's so weird to go back and read this story with the Riddler being this type of character, doing the chat thing, and then you seeing the chat thing on the Batman.
You're totally right.
It's so many years of Pat.
In the most recent Batman movie, he is basically anonymous. The hacker collective is a villain, right?
Insane.
Well, Matt, overall, of this whole set, what was your favorite issue or issues of the set?
It's pretty much hands down that ventriloquist, the Lady Ventriloquist story. Those were two great issues.
The Riddler one is a pretty close runner-up for me, but there is a bit of distance. So yeah, I got to agree with you. It's the Zatanna and Lady Ventriloquist two-parter for sure. And then of the three we've read thus far, would you rank them Death in the City number one, Private Casebook number two, and Detective number three?
Yeah, that's exactly how I would rank them.
Okay.
I mean, and that's not saying that Detective is like the worst. It's not bad.
It does set up a lot of trends that the later two volumes are playing off rather well. So it's not essential foundation, but useful foundation. We are looking at the first storylines of Absolute Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman, which is usually the first six or seven issues. And then a week after that, or maybe 2 weeks after that, because of me being out of town, we are going to do the original Hush 3, Heart of Hush, which I think is Detective Comics 846 through 850.
And by then, Bob, we'll have probably the second issue of what they're calling Hush 2.
But we all know is actually Hush 4 or 5.
You got it, Bob. I want you to thank me for allowing you to just go along with that number scheme.
Thank you for allowing me to say it's Hush 4 or 5.
You should be thanking me, because remember, you're the one that has to have it that way. You have to have your Spider-Man's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Or if we wanted to say, like, Maguire 1, Garfield 2. I'm fine with that, too. But I'm always going to come back to the difference between Spider-Man or Amazing Spider-Man or Spider-Man Nowhere to Go Home. It's just, I don't know, man. What do you want?
Or to the layman, Batman Returns, Batman Begins, Batman Forever, Batman and Robin, Batman Dark Knight Rises, Batman Dark Knight Returns, Batman.
The people who have made the Batman movies, especially the first seven, were actually very good at getting fairly distinctive titles.
Yeah.
It's only with the Spider-Man where it's you have to know the difference between, no, Spider-Man 2 is not the same as Amazing Spider-Man 2, is not the same as Spider-Man Go Home to Your Room.
Yeah. Well, it's okay, Bob. We'll get it all figured out eventually, but we're going to keep...
Okay, me, like, I'm the problem. You have the problem. People titling the Spider-Man movies the problem.
Well, Bob,
thank you.
We're going to be working at Hush 3 and then Hush little pieces of Hush 4.
I really appreciate your orientation to objective reality.
Wait until there's a prequel. That's going to really mess things up.
Oh, man. Well, yeah, I mean, we already had a little bit last week with Santa Kid Hush. Ooh, what if it were a whole Little Wayne Family Adventures with Tana and Little Hush? You love it.
All right.
Well, thanks for listening to Uncanny Tracks. We will see you next week for Absolute Batman and Absolute Superman and Wonder Woman, and then we will see you in 2 weeks for Hush 3.
Thanks for listening.